All right. You are listening to Green Left Radio, and you're just listening to Never Fade Away by Blue King Brown. Now, we're very happy to have our first interview for the program. We are interviewing Rehana Mnudin from the Party of the Labouring Masses, and we're having her on the program to talk a bit about, to have a bit of a discussion and analysis of the election results in the Philippines, which actually took place on May 7th. So, yeah, good morning, Rehana.
Good morning, Jacob, and thank you for having me on the program, and thank you to Green Left as well.
So, Rehana, I guess to kind of start off, I guess, what can you tell us about the results of the elections in the Philippines, which took place on, I guess, May 7th? And I guess coming out of those results, what is the implications for politics in the country more generally? And what were some of the issues driving the election in the background?
Right. The elections are actually on May 9, which was on Monday this week. And I think it's to understand the results and the so-called election of Marcos Jr. and Duterte, the vice president, the daughter of the current Duterte, the president. Is to understand how the features, if you like, of the Philippine capitalist system, its political system, and that is the rule of dynasties and political clans. So the political system is essentially characterized by the rule of very powerful dynasties and political clans who are a landed capitalist class in the Philippines with established electoral bailiwicks in different parts of the country. In the case of Marcos Jr. and his family, his dynasty is in the north of the country. In the case of the Duterte clan and dynasty, it's in the south of the country. So they've got there, and these are also their electoral bailiwicks. They run these areas on a system of patronage, backed by coercion and violence with their private armies and goons, a corrupt state machinery. So these are the semi-feudal vestiges, if you like, of Philippine capitalism. And the dynasties dominate the entire political system from the Senate nationally and the Congress, which includes the Senate nationally, the upper house, to the provinces, to the districts, to the barangays or the barrios at the local level. So majority of the former Senate were members of dynasties and political clans. 71% of the Congress, lower house, were members of dynasties and political clans. Over 80% of the governors in the provinces are members of dynasties, and a majority of them aligned with Duterte. And so what we have with the Marcos Jr.'s election campaign for the presidency and Sara Duterte running as his vice president, we had some of the most powerful dynasties in the country, the Marcoses, the Dutertes, the Arroyos, the Arabs, backed by billionaire capital. So if you look at the recent Forbes list of Philippine billionaires, a majority of them backed the Marcos Duterte axis of evil, as we called it, and backed this campaign and the presidency. And they've been trying, the Marcoses have been trying for a long time now to get back into the presidency, into that position of power. Marcos Jr. himself was a senator. His mother, Imelda, was in Congress and so on. So this has been going on for a while. And however, this interference by dynasties in the political process and in the political system was worsened under the rule of Duterte, was more consolidated under the rule of Duterte. So as far as we're concerned, this is an illegitimate regime that is bidding for power, that has supposedly won the elections. And the system of dynasty rule also institutionalized dynasty rule in the political system is also based on institutionalized electoral fraud. So electoral fraud is not just a one-off thing, it's institutionalized in the system. There's a vote-buying machinery that operates at the local level. This is a machinery. It's run by the political dynasties. Apparently, the cost, the market rates and the cost of votes were 10,000 to 15,000 pesos per vote, which is around $250 plus per vote was bought for this. These are even the international media, some bits of the international media have been carrying this. And in the provinces, 66 of the provinces, the votes were captured by Marcos and Duterte, while the main liberal bourgeois opposition leader, Lenny Robredo, only captured 15 provinces. So again, this is what existed before. The governors of the provinces were primarily with these Marcos Duterte dynasties. Then the electronic voting system itself, run by the Commission on Elections, the key leadership of the Commission on Elections, the justices and so on, are all Duterte appointees, all of them. All of them are Duterte appointees. So the voting system, through Smartmatic Philippines, to the company L2 Logistics, which is a corporation that is run by a Duterte crony called Dennis Uy. All these are part of, you know, linked to the Duterte dynasty and to support the Duterte presidency. And so we had glitches, so-called glitches, that have in the voting machines, and these have not been explained. There were 201 power interruptions recorded between 4 a.m. to 11 a.m. on the 9th of May, each of them with an average duration of 70 minutes. We don't know why this happened and what happened during these power interruptions. Then, of course, you had the role of social media collusion in Facebook with the fake news denying and revising the history of the dictatorship, saying that the economy was great, that there was no plunder, that this is all lies, that there were no violation of democratic rights, that in fact this was a golden era of Philippine politics, and backed by violence. All this is backed by violence, especially at the local level of the private armies and even the state machinery, where they raided. There are videos of them raiding the polling booths, of carrying away ballot boxes, of ballot boxes being burnt, and so on. So all this is also at the, you know, the violence is a key element of all this. In this sort of political institutionalized fraud of dynasty rule, elections can never be free, honest, and peaceful until these political dynasties are dismantled. And we cannot have genuine democracy in the political arena as long as these political dynasties are in power.
And I guess going into the election, the fact that Fernando, also known as Bongbong Marcos Jr., got elected as president, and he... obviously, his legacy is that of being the son of the late Fernando Marcos Sr., who, you know, he ruled the Philippines as a dictator from the 1972 to 1981 before he was finally deposed in 1986. And I guess, what does this election of Marco Jr. as a president signal in terms of attacks on oppressed groups and the working class in the Philippines? And maybe, I mean, I'm not sure if there's much in this, but is if there's any difference in terms of comparison to Duterte's previous regime?
It's Ferdinand Marcos was his father, who was the former dictator, who was ousted through people's power. He was backed by the United States. Without the U.S. backing, political and military backing through their bases and their CIA operations on the ground against the underground resistance, Marcos would not have survived as long as he did. And in the end, the U.S. Had to ferry him out of the country to go and live in the U.S. where he died. In terms of political, what it means in terms of the political scenario that's unfolding, what we would have is the continuation of a Duterte-style rule, which is an authoritarian rule, more authoritarian, but not necessarily more authoritarian, without a blanket dictatorship like we had during the Marcos period, which we survived and resisted against and won against. Congress is with them. Most of the people elected in Congress are with Marcos and Duterte. In the Senate, only one senator is with the opposition. The opposition just got completely wiped out as a part of this electoral fraud. Marcos Senior, the dictator, had to close down Congress. Duterte didn't have to close down Congress because it's with him. And I think that will continue. But there is a resistance. I think this is really important to understand. The resistance to this, to electoral fraud, and to the possibility of this regime being established, started on day one itself. On the evening of the polling booths being closed, on the evening, students basically called for a complete closure of campus, a boycott of classes under the Marcos regime. Major student councils and student regents, that is, student representatives on university boards, have now come out and declared no classes, no opening to campus under this regime. They have taken to the streets. They're camping out on the streets. And there's this constant mobilization going on. So the resistance has already begun on the first night itself. And labor is now joining, the workers' movement is joining, and today we're going to have some major protests today. It's been called Black Friday. The opposition is mobilizing with Lenny Robredo. They're called the Kakam Pinks. Labor is mobilizing, and PLM and our mass organizations are part of all that. So there's also resistance. So what I think we're going to see is a period of extreme political instability that's going to open up. And this alliance of convenience, which is the Marcos-Duterte dynastic duo, will very unlikely be able to survive this, possibly even within a year, before this dynastic alliance is undone. There are already frictions appearing, divisions starting to appear in terms of how cabinet positions are being allocated. So I think that's the kind of scenario. We think that the government, large sections of the population are refusing and will refuse to grant legitimacy and credibility to the rule of this families of thieves. We think the government bureaucracy will split as well as the military. In terms of the massa, I mean, Marcos, you know, there's desperate, the people are desperate after decades of neoliberal rule. Their lives have been destroyed. The pandemic on top of that, their lives have been destroyed. The socioeconomic fabric of the country has been destroyed, and the people are desperate, which is part of the reason for some of the levels of support for Marcos because of what they have experienced under liberal, neoliberal rule. But all the promises that Marcos has made, he just promised everything. So there was a populism to his platform as well. he's just not going to be able to deliver it. And there will be tremendous anger as a result of this as well. So this is the kind of scenario that we are expecting. We think it's unlikely that this, if it is established, if they they have to, Congress reconvenes in July, and that's when formally the president is, you know, takes on, the person takes on the presidency. If the resistance doesn't upset that scenario, and if they, the regime is established in July, then I think this is, it's going to be extremely unstable politically, and it might not last even a year. So this is the kind of situation that we expect.
All right. So for my next question, I think you've sort of covered different aspects of the question I am about to ask, but I was going to sort of go into some more specific sort of areas of it. Because, yeah, obviously the representative, Idzil Lagman of the 1st District of Albany, said that, you know, the Filipino people, and I imagine, you know, my understanding, you know, from an outsider is that he represents, I guess, a more liberal kind of capitalist kind of position, politician. And, you know, he basically said the Filipino people have committed a mistake in electing Fernando Bongbong Marcos Jr. for president, but he basically sort of tried to say that the public should respect the so-called democratic process, which you've been clearly raising a lot of criticisms of, that this is not actually a kind of fair democratic process. And I guess I want to hear some of the kind of comments on this, I guess, from the perspective of the socialists, but also given the criticisms that it was not a fair democratic process. And I guess I want to sort of also see your comments on sort of unpacking this sort of comment. What does this kind of reflect about some of the division, because you alluded to this, some of the divisions in the kind of political class and some of the political parties on this election and the general stability of this government in general?
I actually hadn't come across that comment by Edsel Lagman, whom you're referring to. Edsel Lagman is, I have a lot of respect for Edsel Lagman. We've had a coalition with him and a close working relationship with him over the decades. He's the family, the Lagman family is a progressive family. Their one of their sons was killed under the Marcos dictatorship. He was a leader of the underground movement. Edsel's brother was killed. Edsel's other brother was a leader. Popoy Lagman was a leader of the underground movement that I knew well, that I've met as well, and with. And he was assassinated, not under Marcos, but subsequently under elite democracy post-Marcos. So, you know, Edsel comes from a progressive family. He's been a long-term ally. We work, his sister runs one of the main human rights organizations and so on. I don't think his sister would necessarily agree with Edsel's declaration. You know, we don't agree. We differ with him on this, and we have differed with him on these issues in the past. He does on various issues. I mean, he does represent the liberal bourgeois opposition in the country. He's an important voice in that opposition, I hope he does change his position, especially with the resistance developing. And I hope he backs the resistance and the protests on the streets. But more broadly speaking, I think what it represents is that the liberal opposition, also bourgeois opposition, also plays the same game of dynasty politics and trap, or what we call traditional politics, or trap or politics. So they play the same game, and they don't really challenge the political system of dynasty rule. And I think more broadly speaking, this is what it represents.
And I guess one of the most important aspects, and this is something we were discussing with you in the lead up to this election, is the Party of the Labouring Masses ran a full left wing ticket, including running for the positions of president and vice president, which is something that, from my understanding, actually hasn't been necessarily been done by the left before. And I guess, what can you tell us about your results in the overall election? And I guess, what lessons did this overall campaign offer for the broader left in the Philippines?
Well, our election, we suffered as a result of the targeted electoral fraud against the opposition. As I said, in the Senate, there's only one opposition senator who got in, who was a part of the Lenny Robredo camp. The opposition vote was seriously affected and targeted as a part of the electoral fraud. But nevertheless, we still had a big national political impact. Our platform that we ran on, which was an anti-capitalist, anti-neoliberal platform, got mainstream national projection. We got a very positive hearing and response from the masa, especially the youth. There was a sort of spontaneous support, pouring of support from the youth. And of course, this, because of electoral fraud, this hasn't been translated into votes. But even in such a rigged system, in such a massively rigged fraudulent system, we managed to garner around 4 million votes. That is around 10% of the national votes cast, if you don't discount for the votes bought. So if you just look at the overall votes cast, that's around 10%. I don't know what the ratio of votes are that are bought straight out. It could be 1 to every 5, so it could be 20%. Which means that would be much higher than the 10%. And we have established national candidates now, nationally recognized candidates who are putting forward our calls right now to resist the regime with authority in the eyes of the masa, especially young people. Our candidates are being invited to attend all these youth gatherings, the sit-ins on the street, and are being cheered as we call for building the resistance. So, you know, we are well positioned in terms of the support that we have within this spontaneous resistance of youth. Of course, we are well established in the labor movement, and we are in terms of the leadership of this resistance, we are in a solid position now. That's how we assess it.
Well, that actually leads into what you kind of said, and I'm definitely keen to kind of hear more about this aspect, because I guess following this kind of election result, and I guess we can sort of make this, in a sense, the kind of final kind of question in terms of our discussion here. I mean, how is, I guess, you know, it's clear that following this election that the PLM is sort of well positioned to kind of mobilize the masses against this incoming presidency. And I guess, but also more broadly, how does this actually connect with, you know, the broader left within the kind of country? And I guess, what is the kind of resistance that is going to be kind of organized in response to this presidency, and how this is going to go forward?
Well, PLM is calling for a broad united front of the left and progressives against the regime, against electoral fraud and against the regime. And various discussions are underway. And as a part of this broad united... Hello, can you hear me?
Yep, I can all hear you. Yep, it's all good.
As a part of this broad united front, the protest tomorrow... part of this broad united front. Lenny Robredo is mobilizing her forces separately, but the left is mobilizing together, and Labor is mobilizing tomorrow. So we're calling for a broad united front with Lenny Robredo and the anti-Marcos opposition with the left, and negotiations are underway. Some of the actions, taking place today, not tomorrow, the actions taking place today as a result of this broad unity that we are calling for. Yes, so today is Black Friday. In a few hours, people will be mobilizing from 9 o'clock in the morning, Manila time, to is one lot of protests, 9 to 10, one lot of protests are starting to gather Manila time, and then 3 p.m., the Robredo forces will start to gather. Part of the protests are taking place outside the Commission on Elections, and the other Robredo protests are taking place in one of the main universities, which have called for no classes under the regime. So today is a key day. People are on the streets, students are on the streets, labor is joining the students. There will be we can have further updates after today.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Rahana, for being on our program this week. I think this has been a very informative, good interview, you know, giving a bit of an overview of the election result in the Philippines, but also the kind of general kind of response, from the broad left. And of course, yeah, Green Left Radio would like to kind of extend all the solidarity we can, to this sort of, this struggle against this, against the incoming presidency. And I think, yeah, we would definitely want to hear more discussions as things, develop. So thank you very much, Rahana.
Thank you, Jacob, and thank you very much to Green Left. I think it's really important to get this information out and to build solidarity with the resistance in Australia.